It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 84th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening. I've got a great conversation with Michael Allen Nelson, one of my very favorite comics creators. He's got several important gigs coming up, including Supergirl and also The Orphans for Boom Studios. So he talks a lot about that and about some of his past projects as well. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Then Gianluca Glazer joins me to talk about the latest news and previews. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome back to the podcast Michael Allen Nelson, one of my favorite writers in comics, creator of such wonderful things as Enigma Cypher, Dingo, recently Veil and the Outcast, and Malignant Man. So how are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing great. I actually, although I will say that I am a little worried because apparently the sky is falling. Everybody's talking about the asteroid that's supposed to barely miss the Earth tomorrow, but I just saw on io9 this morning, apparently there are all these videos out of Russia of a meteorite hitting somewhere in Russia, and just like all these videos of like windows being broken out and this giant fireball streaking across the sky. It's pretty dramatic footage if you haven't seen. So
wow.
Yeah, so I walked to the coffee shop this morning, I'm looking up just like waiting for the, you know, to get beamed in the back of the head by something from the heavens. So
sounds like there's a comic story in that.
Exactly,
somehow.
Exactly.
Sounds like it to me. Anyway, well, you got two big things coming up, so why don't we go ahead and get started talking about that? Why don't we talk about your super assignment first? You were working on Ravagers for DC, and unfortunately that's being canceled, but you got a good assignment coming up. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah. Well, what happened is I had been talking with DC for a long time. The folks there seemed to like what I do, and so, you know, just, you know, been in conversation with them for a while. And, you know, they had some ideas of some titles that they thought I might be a good fit for. And eventually they offered me Ravagers. And basically what happens is that, you know, when they think that I might be a good fit for a title, they're like, what would you do with the title first? You know, it's like, we like your writing, but let's see what you can do with the title first. And so I pitched some ideas and they liked them and said, okay. Unfortunately, it was one of those titles that just didn't gain the traction that they were, you know, I guess they were hoping that it would gain. So, you know, it was, you know, unfortunately, by the time, I think it was like the week after my first issue for Ravagers came out, news dropped that it was canceled. So, you know, unfortunately that happens. That's, you know, that's part of the business. And I only drank, you know, half a bottle of scotch because of it instead of a whole bottle. No. But again, what was nice is they said they liked what I did, and they wanted to bring me on to Supergirl. And so, I mean, that I literally spent probably an hour standing in my apartment, just sort of staring at the walls going, did I hear that right? Did they really, really? And so it took a little while to settle in. But yeah, I mean, it's been a great experience so far. One of the things that I love about working with DC is that they love the collaborative process. And it's great to be able to get on the phone with the artists, with the editors, or even, you know, even through email, and just like bang ideas out back and forth. And what's great is that, you know, I've been very fortunate in that the people that I've been working with, not just in DC, but just in my career in general, have always been, you know, what can we do to make the story better? What can we do to make this the best story that we can? And so, and it's sort of like no one's afraid to call me on my BS. They're like, yeah, sorry, this idea isn't working, so we need to come up with something new. I'm like, oh, that's fine. Then let's come up with something new. It's been an interesting process. You know, it's so funny because a lot of people, I guess, are surprised because they're like, why would you put this guy on Supergirl? And because apparently I'm known for my horror. But you've read enough of my stuff. You know, I've done a lot of fantasy. I've done a lot of science fiction. You know, I even wrote a romance pirate story. So, you know, and even though I am probably, you know, most well known for my horror, it's like I think I have other tools in my toolbox. So every time I hear someone mention, like, why would they put a horror writer in Supergirl? I find that a bit funny. Now, granted, I will confess that I do tend to lean to the darker elements of a story. But, you know, one of the things that I'm looking forward to with Supergirl is that, you know, she's such a rich, diverse character that I get to have a lot of fun with her. And, you know, I think that's what it's about. It's about the fun. I mean, I can still have those darker moments and, you know, the fact that she is dealing with the fact that her entire world is gone. That is a very traumatic thing. I couldn't even imagine what that must be like. I remember trying to sit, you know, and think about her as a character, you know, like what's going through her mind. What would it be like if I were to just wake up one morning and everything that I knew was gone? Not just my family, all of my friends, the city that I lived in, the country that I lived in, the planet that I lived on, every culture, everything is just gone. And not only that, it's not just that I was, you know, whisked away and have to find my way back. No, it doesn't exist anymore. What would that do to me? And, you know, how would I feel? And so, you know, trying to figure out how those emotions would work inside of a teenage girl who is a good person. But, you know, so how does that inform her worldview? And so for me, that's been the fun of approaching her as a character.
Well, what's interesting to me is that they've taken a sort of a darker tone with Supergirl ever since the New 52 came around. You know, the current thing they're doing, that Hell on Earth story, she's not pairing with Superman or Superboy. She's kind of against them because of her, you know, her loyalty to Krypton and the possibility of bringing it back. So to me, I think you're a perfect fit for it. I think that she needs to be something different from the other characters. I mean, Superboy's a clone. Superman, you know, is the basic same character, but we need her to be something a little different. She shouldn't just be Superman in a skirt.
That you are 100% right, and that's one of the things that I'm trying to focus on. There is the darker element to it, absolutely, but I'm also, I also do want to introduce an element of fun, and I think that there's a legitimate a character reason for that. Like you said, she's not Superman in a skirt. She's, first of all, she is a true Kryptonian. And I think for me, one of the things that when I was thinking about her as a character, it's sort of, there's a bit of, I don't know if resentment is the right word, but it's sort of this thing where, you know, Superman is this paragon of goodness and virtue, but he doesn't know Krypton. He doesn't know Krypton like she knows Krypton. And so one of the things that I wanted to do is I wanted to, where Superman is basically the best that Earth has to offer, the best that humanity has to offer. I wanted, you know, Kara to come to the realization that she can become the best that Krypton has to offer. You know, it's sort of like she's an ambassador to this ghost world. And, you know, it's sort of like, it's like honoring the memory of the world that you came from.
Well, it's ironic because in the pre-New 52 days, they used to have the Eradicator, whose goal was kind of something along these lines. And he was always trying to get Superman to be much more Kryptonian instead of so human in perspective. And I think that ever since Supergirl's been brought back, you know, she doesn't pop out of a rocket fully formed like she did back in the old days in the 60s. She's basically become this character who's not exactly certain of her standing, and she doesn't want to really be Superman, which I really like about that.
Yeah. I mean, well, she's her own character. She has different goals. She has different, you know, different thought processes, different needs. And it's, I mean, and I think that's the fun of her as a character and writing her, because she does have these different wants and needs. And, you know, and like I said, you know, she's not Superman. Like, she looks at him not with resentment, but it's sort of, he confuses her, I guess you could say. It's you know, it's the idea that, okay, well, first of all, it's got to be a bit awkward. You know, the last time she saw him, he was a mewling babe in her arms, so that's got to be a little disconcerting when he's basically, you know, playing the adult to her, you know, teenage girl. And so that has to be frustrating. And, you know, and again, you know, he's this paragon of goodness and virtue. And so there, I think she's trying to find you know, her place in the universe, and, you know, the closest thing that she has to her home is basically this poser. I mean, it's harsh, but you kind of see what I'm getting at. It's the idea that you're not really Kryptonian. Everybody thinks that you're, you know, a Kryptonian. You know, they look at you, you're, you know, Superman, you're Kryptonian, but it's really, you never lived there. I live there my entire life. I know what it's like, you know, it's like, I know what the air smells like on Krypton. You don't. And it's those kind of things where, so I think that she can be a bit mistrustful of him. And the thing is, she is a genuinely good person. But again, it's like all of these, she has this maelstrom of emotions going on inside of her. And so how does that manifest itself? How does that, how does that work when she tries to develop relationships? How does it, you know, how does it create conflict within those relationships? You know, and how does she develop as a person and as a character within the story?
Now, the thing that interests me the most is that she's a Kryptonian teenager. Now, what's a Kryptonian teenager like? Is it like a teenager on Earth, or is there, are there going to be differences in her experience from what we expect on Earth?
Well, that's a very good question. And I think that, I know for the way that I want to approach it is that obviously there are going to be cultural differences. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to go, I mean, obviously, technically, you know, she's an alien, but we can't make her so alien that she's unrelatable. And so I think that even though, you know, Kryptonians are an alien race, they have, you know, a lot of cultural differences, a lot of technological differences. But I think that it's finding the things that are similar, things that we can relate to, and finding, or even finding the alien analog. What's the Kryptonian analog of going on a first date? You know, because they have the whole gene matching thing. So that's got to be a problem at some point. And so it's finding those things and trying to develop stories with that as sort of like the heart, the core of the story. And because, what is it like to be a Kryptonian teenager? Well, it's probably not that much different from being a teenager on Earth, at least as far as your relationships with your friends go, with your parents. You know, there are things that I think that are very, very similar. So even though there are cultural differences, I think that it's trying to find the similarities and really honing in on that to make that, that way she's, you know, she's relatable.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that always bothers me about Supergirl is she really has no rogues gallery. She's got nobody to go up against. She's always fighting other people's villains or other people's problems. Mm-hmm. And if she does fight people, it doesn't seem like that they never last. You know, she doesn't have a Lex Luthor. She doesn't have a Brainiac or things like that. But she ends up fighting the Superman people all the time. Mm-hmm. Are you going to try to bring some new foes for her that might be unique to her?
Absolutely. Yes, that is one of the things that we definitely want to do. We want to make sure that, you know, she has her own rogues gallery, that she is her own character. She's not, you know, this ancillary character for Superman. We want to make her her own entity with her own stories, her own villains, and her own story arcs, ups and downs, and just really make her a solid character within the DCU that can stand on her own as opposed to being a supporting cast member for other members of the DCU. So absolutely, that's something that we definitely are going to do.
Okay, no hints on that?
No.
I don't want you to get you in trouble for that. But, you know, all I can say is I'm glad you're doing that, because that's something that's bothered me about Supergirl for a long time.
Yeah, it's fun because I'm not going to, obviously I won't go into specifics, but in my first issue, we lay the groundwork on some of that. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Now, one other thing, too, last question on Supergirl, is that I often hear from women that the ultimate woman does not punch and kick people to resolve problems, that they discuss things.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be doing some of that? How much, you know, what's going to be the balance between her female aspect and her superhero aspect?
Well, you know, well, first of all, I don't like to approach it like, well, women approach problems like this and men approach problems like this.
Okay.
You know, I don't like doing that. It's funny because I've had people tell me like, oh, you're actually pretty good at writing female characters. And I'm not quite sure what to make of that. I mean, obviously it's like, it's very flattering, but I'm like, well, I just approach them like characters. Like, I mean, I don't look at it like, well, how would a woman look at this problem? No, it's like, how would a person look at this problem? Like, how would I look at this problem? I don't know what it's like to be a woman. I don't know what it's like to be an alien on a foreign world, but I do know what it's like to be alone. I do know what it's like to feel out of place, to not feel like you belong. So I try to focus on the things that I can relate to and approach it from that manner. Now, the thing with comics, you know, you're dealing with a medium that has no budget. So we can do whatever we want. And, you know, we're going to want to see some fights. But for me, it's like all of that stuff has to inform us about the character. It has to move the story forward. I don't like, you know, just having, you know, Supergirl beating the crap out of somebody or somebody beating the crap out of her just for the sake of like, oh, we've got a couple pages and it'll look cool. And so I think that you know, she is going to be beating some people up. The challenge for me is to make that work within the context of the story. And there's absolutely ways to do it. And that's what I'm going to do. And I think that it's one of those things where I think any rational adult is going to try to, you know, the first thing they're going to do is try to talk their way out of a problem, or if a violent situation is presenting itself, I think most rational people would be like, okay, well, let's, before we start, you know, trying to kill each other, let's talk about this. And then of course, when those talks break down and the last resort of course is punching each other. But what's great about someone like Supergirl is, like, as a teenager, and this is what I was going back to, the idea of what are the similarities between Kryptonian teenagers and teenagers on Earth. And it's the idea that impulse control may not quite be there yet. And, you know, and everything is amplified to the nth degree. Like, the highs are really high, the lows are really low. And so it's not uncommon for a teen. I know I did this when I was a teenager. I'll get just it's the end of the world because I can't take the car to go meet my friend on a Tuesday night. You know, and of course it's I've got homework to do. There are other things that it's not the end of the world. But for me, it's like, no, it was traumatic. Like, I was ruined. I was going to be a pariah in school. I'm going to end up, you know, living in a cardboard box in a cornfield somewhere. It's like, you've ruined my life. And so I think that it's using that kind of, I don't want to say complete lack of impulse control, but that idea of the high highs and the low lows, it's sort of like using that. And I think that sometimes if you're faced with, a big bad whatever that obviously is not human or is dangerous in some way that's looking to eat your head, you know, punching it is not the worst idea in the world.
Right.
But I think that I don't want to make her, that's her first instinct. And the thing, because I mean, and that's the fun that I get to have with the character as well, is that, like, how does she approach problems? And the fact that, you know, she can fight, you know, she has all these superpowers, learning what those powers do, learning, how to control those powers, learning, what the side effects of those powers are. And the fact that, you know, if she sends somebody flying through a building, well, what happens to the people in those buildings? Like, there are consequences to her actions. And sometimes she may not be aware of those consequences until after the fact. And so it all goes back to defining her as a character. So, and again, I don't want to approach it as like, well, women do it this way and guys do it this way. It's like, no, people do things all kinds of different ways. How does she do it as her, as an individual person?
You know, I just want to make it clear, these are my female friends telling me this. So I just, not that I'm thinking this is what they're telling me.
Right. I totally get that. But I'm just saying, as a writer, what I try to do is, you know, try to find the things that I can relate to as a person. Like I said, those ideas of isolation, of getting your heart broken, of being happy, of being sad, the things that I understand. That's what I try to approach it from. And, you know, like I said, I don't know. There is that sort of like, well, women will talk it out first and then guys will just punch it out first. And maybe that is true to an extent, but I don't think that's always the case. And I'm trying to find, and my job as a writer is to try to find out, how does Supergirl as an individual, how does she approach these problems?
Very cool. It's going to be a very thoughtful book, you know, because Superman is kind of struggling these days. Batman's obvious. I mean, we know Batman, we understand him, we can relate to him. Superman being normally good, and I put in quotes, it's kind of tough to write him all the time. A lot of people have struggles with that. It sounds like you're going to take a thoughtful approach, and I'm really looking forward to that.
I hope people enjoy it. I really do. I mean, I'm really looking forward to writing it. I think it's a wonderful universe. She's such a rich character, and I think there's so much potential for great stories there that I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, great. Now let's move on to your other book that's coming out in March. In fact, if you buy Boom Comics this month, it's already got advertisements for it. Nice, like an orange or yellow background within it. It's called Orphans, and the subtitle is The U.S. Government Building a Better Bomb. It's got a young boy kind of building this bomb, which is a scary thought right off the bat. So, do you want to talk a little bit about that? What's this book going to be about?
This book is about a group of, well, orphans. The idea is that you have agents that operate underneath, think of sort of like a shadow special ops team. There are specific members of the government that are in all branches of the government, you know, the CIA, FBI, NSA, that oversee this shadow organization. And the purpose of this shadow organization is to be the absolute best at everything. at everything. And what you have, then you have this elite team that is able to basically protect America and American interests. But in order to create these elite agents, you have to start at a very, very young age.
Oh,
and the idea is that because it is a shadow organization, the training techniques can be would not necessarily be sanctioned by the U.S. government. So it's sort of like, let's do everything off the books, so that way we can make sure that we have the best of the best of the best. And so it's the story of those agents and how and what they have to face as far as a threat to the U.S. and a threat to themselves as well.
And this makes me think a little bit about how sometimes terrorists will use young children to accomplish things. Is that going to be some of this? What is it? A young child is going to appear to be very normal and will like infiltrate into an area and but have this technical knowledge and be able to like take down the bad guys if needed?
Well, it's basically we see them as adults, as younger adults. You know, I would say like early 20s, that sort of thing. And you know, it's the idea that the training that they've been through throughout their childhood and through their adolescence comes to fruition when they finally are put into a quote unquote family. And every family has a dad, and the dad is he's the god of their world. And so we will have flashbacks to their training as children. And I'm going to be honest with you. That is where I had some a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with that. You know, it's sort of like, how cruel can I be?
Oh my goodness!
So, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's sort of like Bourne Identity meets James Bond meets the Illuminati. It's that kind of vibe where, again, it's the best of the best of the best. Because the idea is, we didn't want to give, you know, they don't have superpowers, but they can do the maximum of what human beings can achieve, you know, physically, mentally. And it was fun doing the research for that. It's like, well, how long can a person hold his breath? How high can a person jump? How many mental calculations can they compute in a second? And so it's finding those extremes. And those are just general examples. But, you know, it's what are those extremes and how do they inform the story? And how do they use those abilities to fight terrorist organizations?
So the book is called Orphans because these kids are kind of taken away from their families originally?
I don't want to say too much because a lot of that comes out in the story, but it's the idea that, yes, okay, it's possible that they either are taken away or they just happen to be orphans. Mm-hmm. And but again, they're recruited at a very young age.
Cool. That sounds like an interesting thing. I don't think we've seen anything like that. And I'm always one who likes to see new stories that I haven't read before, because oftentimes they'll put just different costumes on and tell the same story over and over. So this one, to me, is a nice-sounding thing, something very different. I love variety, and so I'm looking forward to that. Now, it comes out in March. This is a monthly comic, right?
Right, yeah. It's going to be a four-issue series. First comes out in March. And also, I have to say that this is the brainchild of, I'm going to mispronounce his name, but Peter Facinelli.
Okay.
He had this great idea and approached Boom and said, you know, what do you think about doing it as a comic? And, you know, Boom loved the idea. And so usually what happens is they'll bring me on, because a lot of times, you know, they'll meet with a lot of creators that have, or people in the industry that have a lot of great ideas, but they may not necessarily know how to actually execute on the comic, how to actually write the script and that sort of thing. So that's what they bring me on. And so I had a lot of fun of developing the story with him and really coming up with something a lot of fun. So I highly recommend it. It's going to be, if you like big action and just craziness, then yes, this is a book for you.
Now, you did this before with Malignant Man. You were brought on with bring another person's idea to fruition, if I remember correct.
Oh yeah. This has happened quite a few times. What happens is like Malignant Man, also Insurrection with Blake Masters. These people come with these great ideas, but because comics isn't their medium of expertise, they bring me on. Sort of like, this is a great idea. How can we make this a great comic? And so that's what they're bringing on to help them do.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to it because I loved Malignant Man. I thought that was a great book. I love that book. I sometimes, unfortunately, some of my local stores would not carry it, and I'd have to drive miles to find like the final issue. I had to drive like 50 miles to get it, and I was so frustrated because I said, why don't my local store carry it? Even the store I ordered it through did not get it, and I was so mad about that. Yeah, so it's kind of crazy. But, you know, when only one person wants it, apparently, he doesn't like to order it. But anyway, I love that. Now, why don't we talk about one book, unfortunately, that has gone the way of the world. And I really enjoyed it was Vale and the Outcast that you were doing. We talked a little bit about how this was kind of a fantasy D&D kind of a setup. And I just enjoyed the heck out of that book. And I was so sorry to hear it was going to end. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, Valen was... It was so much fun to work on. It really was. For those of you listening that haven't heard of the title, basically it's an undead Conan. A warrior king by the name of Valen Brand is killed by a necromancer. And the necromancer, being a bit of a jerk, raises Valen as his undead thrall. But Valen finds a way to get out from underneath the control of the necromancer. And so the series is about his quest to get his soul and his life back from the necromancer. And what was great is that, fantasy is one of those things that has always been close to my heart. When I started writing as a kid, it was pretty much all fantasy. You know, I love playing D&D as a kid. I love playing D&D now. I just love fantasy. And so this was a great opportunity to sort of like scratch that itch. Mateo Scalero doing the art was just, it was just beautiful, He had a great way of doing action and creating these emotive expressions on the characters' faces. And what I really, really loved is there is a character in the series by the name of Jana, and her outfit is a bit skimpy, so to speak. But, it was my job to sort of like come up with a story reason for that. It's like, if we're going to have, half naked people running around, let's have a reason for it, not just be gratuitous about it. But she also has a lot of tattoos. And what I loved about the way that Mateo would do the artwork, it wasn't cheesecake. It wasn't gratuitous. It wasn't like, look, here's, a half naked woman, standing on her head. It was done very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just missed the book. You brought it to a satisfying conclusion of sorts. I would still love to have seen it go on, but I just think this should be a movie or something. It just has all the perfect things for a movie, the elements to it. You've got just the right casting and the right storyline and all this stuff. So to me, I would say shop it around and see if somebody would actually want to make a movie out of it.
That would be very, very nice. But what's interesting is I actually wrote two endings to the book.
Oh.
I wrote what was published, the happy ending. And then I wrote the unhappy ending.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to post the script for it on my blog sometime soon. And basically all it is when you read the eighth and final issue of the series, the last panel, I think, of page 20, or maybe it's page, no, I'm sorry, page 19, of page 19, where Jana's standing there and she's standing over a character's dead body. And she hears her name called off panel, and then you turn the page and you see that it's one character. Well, in the bad ending, it's a different character.
Hmm.
And so it's it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's dark. So
I gotta see this. I'm dying to see it. Let me know when it's up there because I definitely wanna
absolutely. Yeah. So and again, it's one of those stories that I just loved. I had so much fun populating that world and coming up with the ideas and just getting as much awesome story in there as I could. That's one of the things that I really like about the series is that there's a lot of stuff that happens. So.
Well, what I like about your writing in particular is that I drop into the story and I forget where I am. I'm completely in the story. With Valen, I was forever in the story, and I would get to the end of it and I go, wait a minute, where's the rest of it? Because I was always anxious to keep going, and I just love that. I love it when a story can yank me out of where I am and make me completely forget that and put me into the story, which your writing does. So I like that a lot.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
Well, Michael, good to talk with you as always, and wish you a lot of success. And I'm looking forward to your take on Supergirl. When's it going to start, actually?
I think my first issue is issue 20.
Okay.
So I think that is in the midst of the WTF thing
that's
got going on. So
okay.
I think they're up to, I think 17 is the most recent issue, or is the most or it's the issue that's coming up next, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So got a few issues before I'm in there, but it's coming up really, really soon. So
good.
Keep on the lookout.
I will, definitely. And it's good. I hope everybody will pick it up. I would just laugh if Supergirl became the biggest of the super titles. That would be wonderful.
I would not complain, no.
Well, Michael, good talking with you. And hopefully we'll get to talk with you again when other stuff is coming up.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
It's time for this week's news and previews, and back with me, as always, is John Luca Glazer. How are you doing today, John Luca?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Okay, you got metallic sounding to me all of a sudden.
Oh, no, that's my announcer's voice.
Oh, okay, all right. Anyway, why don't we get into the news? What should we know about that's going on?
Yes, there's actually lots and lots of news. Let's start off on the movie television side. Over on Marvel, we have George Romero, guy famous for directing the Night of the Living Dead movies. He's got a project coming out in the fall of 2013, and it's Marvel of the Dead. At least that's what it's being teased as. Mm-hmm. So not a whole lot of details. It is obviously going to involve zombies, but not superheroes, so it's not like the Marvel Zombies series that's been going on in the past. Hmm. All right. Other Marvel news, Kick-Ass and X-Men First Class director Matthew Vaughn has signed on as a producer for the Josh Trank-directed Fantastic Four reboot from 20th Century Fox. Mm-hmm. So this movie's going to come out in the spring of 2015. Mm-hmm. Mark Miller... Mm-hmm. from the Marvel universe, is mm-hmm. overseeing all of Fox's Marvel-based films. So he's the one who actually broke the news with a tweet regarding this.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. Always cool stuff here with Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill has confirmed that he is considering appearing in the new Star Wars films.
Oh, wow.
So apparently in a recent interview, he says, quote, they're talking to us. George Lucas wanted to know whether we'd be interested. He's talking about himself, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford. He said that if we didn't want to do it, they wouldn't cast other actors in our parts. They would just write us out. I can tell you right away that we haven't signed any contracts. We're in the stage where they want us to go and meet Michael Arndt, who is the writer, and Kathleen Kennedy, who is going to run Lucasfilm. Both had meetings set that were postponed on their end, not mine. They're busier than I am. So, you know, are you looking forward to seeing Star Wars if they brought back the original cast members?
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I would not want to see somebody else cast in their roles. That would be sort of – I mean, there are people they could get to do that, but I just kind of think that Star Wars being Star Wars, you're going to make the fans happier if you have the original actors.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and it's good to have those characters as well, too, as opposed to just making it many years after they're gone.
Yeah.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I guess, it's being made, but it's not going to be teenage or mutants, right?
Right.
Yeah, so they finally cast somebody in the movie. Oh. Megan Fox, who is going to be playing the role of Master Splinter, who I think she's perfect for, actually. You know,
Megan,
right? Rat.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait a second, that's a rat. How's she?
My bad. I'm sorry. She's playing April O'Neil.
Okay, that sounds much more sense.
Thinking on my fart. So, the interesting part about this news, though, is that she's going to be working with Michael Bay again. He's only the producer of the film, but they had worked previously on the first two Transformers movies, and they did not have a great relationship during that time. You know, he had dropped her from the third movie. And, you know, she compared him to Hitler, I think, at one point.
Well, that'll be fun then.
So, yeah, so it's kind of interesting that I guess she's back in his good graces and it's been cast. Although he could have cast her as Master Splinter. I think that would have been like a nice retribution.
Oh, my goodness.
Stan Lee's going to have a movie, I guess, come out. It's being funded actually by China. Magic Storm Entertainment has announced that film and TV producer Barry Josephson, who's responsible for both Bones and Enchanted, is signed on to produce an adaptation of Stan Lee's Annihilator. Isn't that a great name? Based on a script by Dan Gilroy, who wrote The Bourne Legacy and Real Steel, which that was a pretty good movie, actually, Real Steel. But this one, Annihilator, will tell the story of a young Chinese expatriate who survives a U.S. Army super soldier program, largely because of his martial arts training. All the training and enhancements will come in very handy when Ming, I guess his name, faces off against a former rival with his own set of enhancement abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So doesn't this, you know, taking away the Chinese element, doesn't this sound like familiar to a recent story that came out through Image a couple of years ago? Involving, you know, a couple of super soldiers going at it.
Yeah, Red Spike was a wonderful book.
Yeah, so, Stan Lee, what's the matter with you? Well, I guess he didn't really write it, though.
Mm-hmm.
He probably had somebody, he came up with the idea, the concept, while flipping through an issue of Red Spike.
I imagine, yeah.
But he gave it a much catchier name, Annihilator.
Yeah.
So, over on the DC side, you've heard about the thing with Orson Scott Card, right, Wayne?
Yeah, that's in the Adventures of Superman, the digital first story. He's doing the first two episodes, they call it, but like two editions of it.
Right.
And, of course, he's come out and had some controversial stuff. I wrote about this on the website a little while back, and he's came out with some controversial things about gay marriage.
Yes. He's not for it. He's actually actively against it.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people are upset that, you know, he's getting comic book work. And even though this isn't a long-term deal, you know, a lot of people have protested to DC regarding this.
Mm-hmm.
So DC has responded to The Advocate, a gay and lesbian magazine. They said, quote, "As content creators, we steadfastly support freedom of expression. However, the personal views of individuals associated with DC Comics are just that, personal views and not those of the company itself."
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they want to have their card and eat it too.
Yeah. See, I don't understand why these people didn't get upset when he did stuff for Marvel.
Right. Maybe there was, but who knows? You know, we now have more news outlets to report on this kind of thing. And I don't know. That's an interesting question.
You know, because they did this, I mean, years and years of the Ender's Game stuff was on his stuff. And his name was on the top of the book every month.
Right.
It came out. And now all of a sudden he does a Superman story and, man, people go bonkers.
He also did an Iron Man thing, too, I think a couple of years ago. So
yes, he did. Did the comments come out after he did those or what?
You know, that's a good question. You know, maybe it's such a hot button issue now, the idea of gay marriage since the recent election.
Mm-hmm.
So, could be it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yes. Few promotions to announce in the world of comic books.
Okay.
Over on Diamond Comic Distributor side, they have announced that Chris Powell has been promoted to the new position of Vice President of Retailer Services. Powell is a recent guy working at Diamond. He joined early last year. He originally was working as Lone Star, and he was put in charge as the Executive Director of Business Development, where he was developing programs to help comic retailers improve and expand their business.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's moving fast because basically, like, a lot of these guys that have been working at Diamond have been working there for, like, 20 years, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. Last time we did the show, I announced that Bill Shane, what was it? Somebody had stepped down. I believe Bill Shane's did.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he'd been there since, like, the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things are kind of moving pretty fast by Diamond standards, you know, somebody being promoted to a vice president in a little over a year's time.
Wow.
So regarding his new position, Powell will be handling Diamond's customer service as well as the technical support departments, kind of revamping those.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting there.
Mm-hmm.
Things from another world, you know, the online retailers that also have stores as well, too. They've recently promoted Andrew McIntyre to vice president. Andrew McIntyre, he worked in the marketing department. He was also previously the senior director of retail operations at Another World.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him. John Richardson, previously Things from Another World director of purchasing, has been named the chief purchasing executive as well. Andrew's a really great guy. You know, obviously this podcast is recorded later, but as of this recording, it was also recently his birthday, too. So he got both promoted and his birthday within, like, within 2 days' time.
Wow. So that's a birthday present for you.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I've met him a number of times. He's actually a big Golden Girls fan. Just so you know, he's got a great Golden Girls shirt that I took a picture of like a few Comic-Cons ago. And we worked on a professional level as well, too.
Wow.
He did these great auction things that were, you know, whenever there was a convention, we would get like an original art piece from somebody to auction for charity for the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. And then we would do these promotional cards with that actual picture, you know, that's being auctioned off. And it would, like, you know, give the booth of the person who's signing, you know, at the show where they're going to be, and help promote both their signing event as well as the piece that they donated, you know, for the auction. So glad to see him get promoted. He's a great guy. And then the third promotion going on is over on the Comics Pro side. Thomas Gall, owner of Corner Stores Comics and Beach Balls Comics in Anaheim. He was previously the recording secretary for Comics Pro. He's been elected to president for the Comics Pro Board of Directors. He replaces founding president Joe Fields after 9 years, who remains on the board. Additionally, Ralph Mathau of Alternative Reality Comics in Las Vegas was elected to the board. And Car D'Angelo, over, you know, in the Valley area in Los Angeles, of Earth 2 Comics, he was reelected and made vice president. Also, Eric Kersamer of Chicago Comics was also reelected. Interesting stuff there. Congratulations to all these guys. Other DC news, there's going to be, speaking of Orson Scott Card, I'm sure you're going to be happy over this, but in Batwoman number 17, Kathy Kane, who's obviously a lesbian if you follow the Batwoman series, he has proposed at the end of issue number 17 to Captain Sawyer, Maggie Sawyer, your secret girlfriend. So if they get married, I'm sure Orson Scott Card will not be invited. And you soon might not have to be lugging around those big, giant diamond preview catalogs anymore, Wayne.
Really?
To get those diamond previews. Starting with the April 2013 issue, customers can buy the print version at their local shop or buy a code to download a digital version, either in-store or from the store's website. Or you could do both. You can get a combo edition. The print version, which, you know, has Marvel previews, is still at the same $4.50. The digital version of previews will be $3.99, and the combo version will be $5.49. Why do that? Why not just make it $5.50?
Well, it makes you think it's cheaper. It sounds cheaper when you say $5.49 and $5.50.
It's a penny less. It's not 50 cents.
Does it say anything about them giving out their the order forms?
You know, you can download those off of, there's many retailer sites and such that you can download those order forms from.
Okay.
You don't necessarily have to purchase that. But, you know, not all people who sell the paper version of previews, they don't always give you the order form either.
No. No, you have to ask for that.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. I'm sure with the digital one, you would have the order form.
Because that might be nicer. I lug that big, heavy book around with me, and I could put it on my iPad, and I could just take my iPad and read it there.
Yeah, you know, it does seem a bit pricey, though. I mean, I understand charging $4.50 for the paper version because it is a big book. It's weighted. You have to ship it. Costs quite a bit of money. Quite a bit of ink and paper go into it. A digital version, though, is only 50 cents less. You know, you would think that you would save, you know, some money. More money, you know, than just that. For
well, they're probably going to take it, price it high to start, and then if it doesn't sell that well at $3.99, they'll drop the price down. I bet you.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I wonder if there's going to be all those ads and stuff on it too.
Probably.
No, we'll see. Sad news: Scott Clark, who is an artist for DC and Wildstorm, passed away at a very young age of 43. No details regarding how he passed away, but he was notable for his work on Stormwatch, Brightest Day. He was recently working on Batman Inc. He was also the artist for Grifter and the upcoming Martian Manhunter strip with Matthew Kind in the new Justice League of America. So, very active guy, 43, very young age. You know, very sorry to hear about this.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah. And moving along, on a totally different note, a number of creators are boycotting Dragon Con. You probably heard about this, Wayne. They're pressuring the organizers, including Atlanta area retailer Pat Henry, to separate themselves from jailed shareholder Edward Kramer. Kramer's not a very good guy. The boycott is being led by horror author Nancy Collins, Transformer producer Don Murphy. The creators also include guys like Ron Mars, Joe Lansdale, Colleen Doran. Basically, you know, this guy Kramer has been accused. You know, I can't say he's been convicted. He hasn't, because he's delayed this, but basically dealing with underage boys.
Oh.
So, you have anything about this?
I heard a lot of people talk about Dragon Con this year. I that kind of stuff really worries me, especially if you're, you know, somebody who has access, if you're involved with comics and media and stuff like that, you're very likely to run into younger kids. And so I think that's a...
Yeah.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah. Well, what happened is that this goes back to 2000. He was part of the team. He was a shareholder in the company. And when they heard about this news, they fired him. But he still is a shareholder, so he still makes money every year from profits from the show. They are obligated to pay him, and they have released their own statement, too, where they cannot get rid of him. They've tried a number of times to buy him out. He refuses to do so. He's threatened to sue them. I guess he is maybe suing them. And there's just – it's kind of a legal mess. They're trying to figure out a way – right now, they're not in a position to dissolve the company without a lawsuit, without there being issues, and then, you know, reforming a new company to run the show without him. So at this point, they're stuck with him. They've kind of expressed this now recently to people. But, you know, people are still obviously upset that a child molester is profiting from the show.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to figure out how to get rid of him, though. If they, I guess they're trying to hit him in the pocketbook. If the con doesn't make as much money, then he suffers.
Yeah, basically that's it. They don't want to contribute money that's going to go towards him and his ongoing legal offenses for child molestations. Multiple.
Yikes.
Yes.
Yikes.
So you're a big Green Lantern fan, Wayne. Mm-hmm. You didn't get to talk a week ago and discuss the people that have left the Green Lantern comics, but we can talk about the people who have now joined.
Well, basically all the Green Lantern people have left. Everybody that was doing a Green Lantern book is gone now, and they've got a whole new bunch of people.
They do. So this was recently announced, the new creators. There's also going to be a new Green Lantern book. Larfries. Am I pronouncing that right, by the way?
Well, I think Larfries. I'm not sure if that's a new book, or they're having a backup by Larfries in the Threshold that Keith Giffen's writing. And so I'm kind of thinking they're not really referring to that as a new book, but the backup in Threshold.
Oh, interesting, because I saw the article saying there was going to be an all-new Green Lantern title written by Keith Giffen and art by Scott Collins.
Could be, but they're having it as a backup right now, and maybe it's popular enough they'll pull it out and give it its own book.
Maybe. We'll see. So Jeff Johns, of course, is stepping down from his very long run on Green Lantern, and he's being replaced by Robert Venditti, and artist Billy Tan is going to be now working on that as well, too. Joshua Hale-Fialco, who is working on iVampire, he's teaming up with Bernard Chang to work on Green Lantern Corps. And then we're going to have Justin Jordan and Brad Walker take over Green Lantern New Guardians. Then Red Lantern is also going to have Joshua Hale-Fialco and artwork by Alessandro Vitti. So interesting lineup. Some really good artists, some really good writers. So we'll see how the big shakeup's going. Did you think it was necessary?
You know, well, Jeff Johns, I guess everybody's been kind of associated with him. I mean, Peter Milligan, all these other people have been doing stuff with him, and I guess they kind of feel invested in it. I always thought that Milligan would be a great one to write Green Lantern should Jeff Johns go, but, you know, I guess they just decided it was time to move on to other projects. And, you know, Jeff Johns had done it for 9 years, and he had told a lot of groundbreaking stories and changed Green Lantern forever. Right. As far as I'm concerned, so I just it was just, I think it was time for him to move along. He's got other stuff to do. He's doing Justice League of America. He's doing Justice League. Mm-hmm. He's kind of their premier writer, and so I, as well as one of the higher ups. So I just don't know why they decided all to go. I think that would be nicer if they would have kept a couple of them on. I think the sales would have been better if you would have if somebody else would have just taken his place rather than, you know, clearing the decks like they're doing.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you read, like, those other books as well, too, and if you really felt like for a Red Lantern or Green Lantern Corps, if they really needed to, like, totally replace, like, the writers and artists on all those.
I wouldn't have. I would have replaced on Green Lantern, but I would have kept everybody else the same.
Mm, interesting. Well, we'll see how the new teams work, you know, with the new series. So. Mm-hmm. And then final piece of news that I have regarding Valiant Entertainment, they have signed on Clayton Crane, who's a really good artist. He's going to be joining the creative team of Joshua Dysart, Dwayne Zerzinski, probably butchered that, and Clayton Henry for Harbinger Wars, number one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a four-issue series that is a focal point for the 12-issue Harbinger Wars crossover event that pits Bloodshot and Harbinger against a new generation of superhumans and each other. So, really enjoyed Clayton Crane's work. When I worked at Radical, he did, like, some covers for the Aladdin series. So, he's going to be doing interiors for this book. So, it'll be interesting.
Cool. Very good.
Do you have any news yourself, Wayne?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things that I want to talk a little bit about. First thing I want to talk about is the media related. Remember we talked about Batman, Dark Knight Rises, the part two had come out, and I was uncertain as to what was going to happen after that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're getting word on what's going to happen, and that includes a direct-to-DVD movie called Superman Unbound.
Interesting.
It's going to be on May 7th. It's going to be from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. Remember before they were under sort of a DC banner.
Yeah.
So now they've moved it up, but they're still doing other stories. They've got Matt Bomer. If you've watched White Collar, he's the guy that wears the hat. He's the voice of Superman. And Fringe's John Noble is the voice of Brainiac. This is based on a story written by the aforementioned Jeff Johns. He did a really good story on this, and everybody was very happy with it. And so I'm not surprised that they're doing that.
Yeah.
And it's, they've got two actresses from Castle. And I don't happen to watch Castle, so I don't know much about them. Stena Katic and Molly Quinn. They're Lois Lane and Supergirl.
Uh-huh.
And this is a souped-up Brainiac, so it'll be kind of interesting to see that.
Yeah. You know, I guess they're also capitalizing on the Man of Steel movie that's coming out as well.
Yeah, that's a smart move made to do that because that'll be in link to that.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. So that's an interesting thing. Interestingly enough, after that, they've kind of hinted what the next movie is going to be after that. Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, of course, was interviewed by somebody, and he let slip something that he was voicing Batman in an upcoming animated movie that focused on the Flash. And he says it's called something like Flashpoint. And if you know DC Comics at all, Flashpoint was this interesting transitional piece before they started the New 52 that really took a lot of chances with the characters. And I really loved it. So if they're going to do an animated movie based on Flashpoint, I'm really going to love that.
Yeah.
You know, the Batman stuff was interesting. I mean, Bruce was the one that was shot in the when Joe Chill appeared. And the father and the mother both went crazy as a result of it. The father became that world's Batman. And the mother, that was a big shock, became the Joker. I just thought that was such an amazing twist. I never dreamed of that in my whole life. Martha Wayne was the Joker. That was just amazing. So that was just kind of that kind of thing that happened in Flashpoint. So I'd like to see that become a directed DVD film. And based on what he's saying, that's going to happen.
Yeah, I could see that, definitely.
And the other piece of news I wanted to talk about was that DC is going to replace many of the canceled books with other books. One of the ones has been announced.
Really?
Remember in the New 52 universe, there was a book called Superman Batman.
Yes, I remember that.
Well, now, of course, to differentiate from those, there's a new book that's going to be called Batman Superman.
Oh, how inventive.
Yeah, very, very. Greg Pak, best known for working on the Hulk in Marvel, is jumping into the DC universe with both feet, and he's never done anything for DC before, so this is going to be quite an interesting little take.
Yeah.
He's calling the two heroes the most dangerous men in the New 52.
Is he still working, doing like a Marvel Now title?
I think he is. I don't think he's under contract with them exclusively.
Good for him. And that's pretty good, too, because you're taking, like, two of DC's most well-known characters on one title. So
I always liked that book when it was out before. It was they did have some lame stories in there occasionally. But most of the time, it was fun to see Superman and Batman. And, of course, people remember way back when they had World's Finest was Superman and Batman.
Yes.
So that kind of stuff. Doing that is just a great thing. I think the artist is going to be Jay Lee also, so that's going to help the book sales a lot.
Oh, yes. He does at least he does the covers, I know, for that Dynamite series, Thundar.
Yeah. So that's what's going to happen. They don't have I didn't see a date specifically yet, but I'm sure it'll be on the March before too very long.
Right.
So he was doing Extreme X-Men, and that was ending in April 2013. So I guess that gave him some free time. So anyway, that's all the news that I have. Should we get into previews as to what's coming that you're looking forward to?
Yes, absolutely. On sale March 6th, there's a number of great titles. Over on the Boom Studios side, a couple of big licenses, Adventures Time, Fiona and Cake, number 3, which has 4 covers. Then you have the Planet of the Apes, Cataclysm, number 7. I see the series probably getting a big boost with the announcement of the upcoming new Planet of the Apes film as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Moving along, Dark Horse Comics, not a whole lot. The Vampire Hunter D, Volume 19, softcover book goes on sale. You're a big fan of the manga book, or I believe Yoshitaka Amano was involved in that, so you might want to pick that up.
Mm-hmm.
Over on DC side, Animal Man number 18 and Swamp Thing number 18. This is kind of the epilogue to the whole Rot World story, so it's finally coming to an end. On Swamp Thing side, this is also Scott Snyder's last issue with the book as well, too. Mm-hmm. Same with the artist for that, Yannick, I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But so they're leaving after issue number 18. So it'll be interesting to see where both series go after this particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
Before Watchmen, Rorschach number 4, the final issue goes on sale. Mm-hmm. Of all the Before Watchmen books, it's the one with like the most best looking artwork by Bermejo.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes on sale. It's got a Lee Bermejo cover and a Ivan Reis and Joe's Prado variant cover as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Dial H, number 10, is on sale, part of the DC Dark Line.
Mm-hmm.
And then, remember Joe the Barbarian?
Yeah.
Harrison's book?
Yeah.
Finally coming out as a trade paperback.
Yeah.
It took a long time for that book to come out, the final issues of the series. It was delayed. Then I guess they took a while to do a hardcover, and now it's probably been a whopping number of years before they decided to release the trade paperback. But it's a really good, unique story.
Yeah, I loved it. I have the hardcover. So for me, I'm glad to see the trade paperback coming out because it's about a boy who's diabetic.
Right.
And when he goes into diabetic shock, he ends up in this other world where some of the people that he knows in the quote-unquote real world involve with him over there. And so, it was, you know, Grant Morrison, when he's good, he's really good.
Yeah.
And this is a really good one.
Just a great concept overall.
Mm-hmm.
And another great collection coming out here is the Sleeper Omnibus Hardcover Edition.
Yeah,
$75 though. That is kind of a big deterrent, but if you like Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' work on Criminal, Incognito, and Fatale, this is where it all started, their collaboration.
Yeah, good stuff.
Definitely good stuff. Over on Dynamite side, Flash Gordon Zeitgeist number 10. Seems like a while since I've heard this title. Has it been like delayed? Do you know?
I think it's kind of off and on. It's not as regular as the other stuff.
Yeah, seems like it. But what is regular is Kevin Smith's Bionic Man number 17.
Mm-hmm.
Over on IDW side, we have a collection of the Rocketeer Cargo of Doom. There's two different versions of it, a direct market edition and a regular edition. This is the one written by Mark Waid.
Right.
And they're starting another miniseries as well, too. Some Hollywood one written by Roger Langridge.
Mm-hmm.
So then, if you're a big fan of The Rocketeer, this is an actual story, you know, like those volumes that they did before were kind of like, with the all-star cast, were kind of like very, very short, you know, few pages each.
Mm-hmm.
This is an actual full-length story since what Dave Stevens is passing away.
Mm-hmm.
IDW also has the Steve Ditko Monsters Volume 1 hardcover book. It's $35, worth checking out if you're a big fan of Ditko's earlier work. Image Comics has The Art of Todd McFarlane, The Devils in the Details, trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
It's $40 if you're a big fan of the 90s, mm-hmm. big muscly bound mm-hmm. style of artwork, then this book is for you.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a trade paperback version of Severed. I believe Snyder was a co-writer on that. Is that correct?
Yeah, he wrote that. So, yeah, I have the hardcover of that one, too.
So if you've been waiting for the paperback version, that goes on sale March 6th. Then we also have the Walking Dead Michonne Special second printing variant cover going on sale. So the Michonne Special, you know, was like the special thing that capitalized on the television show, the new season with her character being introduced, and that has gone to a second printing. So for Robert Kirkman, cha-ching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
More money for you.
Yep.
Over on the Marvel Comics side, we have A plus X, which stands for Avengers and X-Men. Issue number 5 of that. The Age of Ultron, 10-issue miniseries, debuts. When you have various covers for that, Flying Hitch does a regular and a sketch. Marco Dergevic has a variant cover on it. There is, of course, your favorite young little Scotty variant cover.
Oh.
And a blank variant cover, which is always a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
I like that minimalist style.
Yeah.
Pick it up at the store, ask if anybody can sign it for you.
Yeah. Oh, brother.
We have the all-new X-Men number 8. And if you missed out on issue number 6, a second printing comes out for that.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Civil War prose novel, which is always interesting to me.
Mm.
Comic book fans reading a book with no pictures
mm-hmm.
regarding the Civil War storyline with, you know, Iron Man and Captain America and their teams going at it. You have, you know, Spider-Man who is conflicted. Mm-hmm. At one point, he is a big fan of the Iron Man, and he has a special suit, and then he decides to switch sides, and at one point, he even takes his mask off and reveals himself to the public.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, all in a non-pictured, written in words, black and white format.
You know, I wish that this would have come out like about 3 years ago when Civil War was going on.
Yeah, that's true, too. Over a storyline that happened 3 years ago and has kind of long been forgotten about since then. We've had like 3 crossover events since then. Mm-hmm. We have a couple more coming out soon as well, too.
Yeah. Jeez.
We have the Deadpool Killustrated, number 1. Mm-hmm. First issue of the 4-issue miniseries. Actually, it's the second printing of it.
Yeah.
If you missed out on it, check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Marvel decided to do something with the Pixar license, finally.
Yeah.
Yes, we have Monsters, Inc., The Perfect Date, number 1. I'm sure it's probably a 2-issue miniseries.
Very likely.
The Road to Oz, number 6 of 6, final issue. Superior Spider-Man, number 5. Where Dr. Octopus has taken over the body of Peter Parker and is possibly trying to get down with Mary Jane.
Mary Jane, yeah. Do you blame him, I guess?
No, kind of creepy there.
Yeah.
And then we have Young Avengers number 1, second print sketch variant cover on sale.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Vanguard has, if you're a fan of Frank Frazetta, who's a great fantasy artist, there's a sketchbook, both a regular hardcover for $40 and a deluxe slipcase edition for a whopping $69.95.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. So what are you looking for from March 6th?
Well, let's go in reverse order this time, because Marvel has something kind of interesting. I'm getting really tired of young children beating up and killing adults. Mm-hmm. Kick-Ass 2 Prelude Hit Girl hardcover is $25.
Yes.
I have to say, I read the recent Hit Girl series, and I'm really tired of that. I think I may have to pull out of those things because I'm just...
You know there's a movie coming out.
There's a movie, of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's Kick-Ass 2.
I just not warming up to that. So anyway, then we move into Image Bedlam, which is written by Nick Spencer. Number 5 is coming out, and also Great Pacific number 5, which I really, really enjoy. That's a good one. I always try to promote that book because it's a good one.
Right.
Then we move up into IDW. There's Doctor Who Prisoners of Time number 1, the second printing, mm-hmm. and Doctor Who Series 3 Volume 1, the Hypothetical Gentleman trade paperback.
Yeah. Hey, Wayne, I wanted to stop you. Didn't back on the Marvel side, aren't you missing like a couple of Daredevil titles?
Well, I buy the Mark Waid Daredevil. I don't buy these. The number 22 is a second printing variant cover, so I didn't mention it. And also, End of Days is not written by Mark Waid, so I don't have anything to do with that. That's issue number 6 of 8 is coming out.
Gotcha.
So that's why I didn't mention. That was what we mentioned him anyway. So.
All right.
So now we get up into we're going to get to I don't see anything else that gets to me in IDW, so we move into Dynamite. Mm-hmm. Dynamite has Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files, Ghoul Goblin number 3 of 6, which is an original story we haven't read or seen anywhere else. So I always like that book. I've been enjoying that a lot. There's also Deja Thoris and the Green Men of Mars number 2 of 8.
Do they have enough covers for that book?
Yeah. Got 6 of 5 of those, looks like, so that'll keep them busy.
Yeah.
You got to go out and buy every one of those. Then we get, let me do Dark Horse first, and then we'll go boom. I'll do DC last.
All right.
And Dark Horse, there's not much that that interests me. Ghost always interests me. I always liked the character. She was a good one in the old days, and they revived her. I don't know how successfully, but issue number 4 is out. We get to boom. Grace Randolph's Superbia number 1 is coming out with the Long Beach Comic-Con variant cover.
Yes. Who has a number of special edition convention covers on sale
today? Yeah. And then Hypernaturals number 9. I always like to mention Hypernaturals because Tom Derenick, who grew up in my hometown in northeastern Pennsylvania, is drawing that. He used to do a lot of stuff for DC, but I guess that's kind of moved on. So
I hate to say this, but I think the series is ending in April or May.
Oh, is it?
I think from the latest solicitations that have come out or leaked online, it seems very much from the description like it's like a final issue.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Well, you know, he'll find other work. He's a good artist. It's very sci-fi, you know, which I also like. Now we get to DC, which I always have a
bunch. Abbott and Lanning do that series.
Yes, that's correct.
And
yeah.
So doing a, what is it, for I think Dynamite, they're doing a, what was that TV series? Battlestar Galactica, aren't they, like, involved in that or something like that?
Could be. I don't know about that, to be honest. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, let me get into DC. There's All-Star Western Volume 2, The War of the Lords and Owls, which, of course, ties to the Owl storyline. Then Amikami Girls number 1, what they're taking. They used to do, like, individual issues of the Amikami Girls, and those are written by Palmiotti and Gray, and are actually quite fun. It's a very reinventive look at the DC girl heroes, which I awfully like. So that's good. And there's a Batman black and white statue by Sean Cheeks Galloway, $80.
Yes.
Batwing, which is changing hands pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Detective 18. I'm really liking the new creative team on there, so I really like that. Then we get to Green Arrow number 18, the Jeff Lemire version. And boy, that last one really threw me. I had a great big surprise at the end, so I'm looking forward to number 18. Then there's Green Lantern 18, which is going to have something to do with other stuff. Human Bomb number 4 of 4, talk about Palmiotti and Gray. Mm-hmm. They're kind of building back the Freedom Fighters, I guess. And what they're doing is this is the latest in their miniseries that they're doing. They've done a bunch of them trying to get it back to the Freedom Fighters, so that'll be interesting. Yeah, Legend of the Dark Knight, number 6, based on the digital ones. Phantom Stranger, which is okay. Now that they've got
J.M. DeMatteis.
It's definitely picking up.
Yes.
Talking about digital first, Smallville Season 11, number 11. Then, interestingly enough, why is Superman is number 17, but everybody else is number 18? They must be behind on Superman.
Perhaps, yeah.
So, Stormwatch is 18, and World's Finest, number 10, which, of course, has Power Girl and Huntress. So, those are the ones that I'm looking forward to. Anything else we should talk about before we call it quits?
No, other than I find it interesting that an artist decides to nickname himself Cheeks.
I don't want to know why. That's something I would rather not know.
Yes. So,
on that note, we'll call it quits for this week's news and previews. As always, thanks, Gianluca. Appreciate all the great news I have no idea about. And hopefully other people will learn as much as I do, too.
Sure. Well, hopefully.
Yeah.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to be back next week when I have a special interview with Adam Beechin, creator of Batman Beyond and the Batman Beyond Unlimited comic for DC. It's always a pleasure when I get to talk with a Batman creator, so I'm sure you'll enjoy it. But until then, keep reading your comics.
Hal Jordan of Earth, Green Lantern of Sector 2814. The Viceroy of Demrak 7 claims that when we assigned you to police crucial peace negotiations, you punched him in the face. Is this true?
No, sir. I punched the Viceroy in the stomach. Then I headbutted him in the face. Sir.